Okay, great. So I was asked to give a string perspective on the recent Twisted developments. So we've heard three talks in the morning about the remarkable relations between the gluon scattering amplitudes and curves in Twisted space. These properties, of course, cry out for a much deeper explanation. And we'd like to know, since we are string theorists, whether there is a string theory making these properties manifest. And the answer turns out to be yes, at least at tree level. The proposed Twisted string theory, which is supposed to describe n equals to 4 super Young Mills, is an open topological B model on a super Twisted space P3/4 with some instantons. So let me now, at least in 5 minutes, explain what each word here means. So P3/4 means a super Twisted space, super version of a three-dimensional projective space, CP3. It's a super Calabi manifold, which means it's a good background for doing string theory. Moreover, the isometry of this space is exactly the symmetry of the n equals to 4 super Young Mills theory. So B model means that it's just a sigma model on this super Twisted space P3/4, restricted to the states which are invariant under certain symmetry groups. So you can just think of it as a certain sigma model. Open means that we are looking at the open string sector of this string theory. So we quantize strings, open strings ending on D5 brains. And it turns out that the spectrum of these open strings is exactly the spectrum of n equals to 4 super Young Mills theory. Another important ingredient in this string theory constructions are D1 brains, or instantons, which precisely wrap the curves on which Young Mills amplitudes are supported, so which has been described in previous talks. So the introduction of these D1 brains lead to an additional degrees of freedom, namely D1, D5 strings stretching between these D5 brains and these curves. So to get an amplitude in string theory, what you have to do is you have to integrate out this additional degrees of freedom. So roughly speaking, to compute an amplitude in the string theory, you integrate out this extra degrees of freedom. So basically, that reduces to some free Fermion correlator over all the possible configurations of all these curves. Now, curves could be, so moduli space of curves consists of various configurations. Curves could be disconnected, which lead to, so here's an example of three disconnected curves, which lead to an MHV rules, which we've heard a lot in the previous talks. Or curves could be connected, which my collaborators and I worked on, and which reduce the computations of Feynman diagrams to solving certain algebraic equations. And in a sense, even though the disconnected curves lead to a new efficient way to compute the perturbative scattering amplitudes, the connected curves are more natural from string theory point of view. So let me say a few words about that now. So what I've explained so far is the original Witten's proposal for the Twisted string theory. There's been other formulations of Twisted string theory. So one is a more conventional string theory, where these curves become the world sheet of certain strings, and that was proposed by Berkowitz. The amplitude calculations in that theory are given precisely by the connected curves. The yet another formulation, so third formulation, is by Waffa and collaborators, which is also a B model on a different space on a quadric in P3/3 cross P3/3, but no amplitude calculations have been done in this theory. So I'd like to say that it's important to explore all these various string formulations, and we need really to understand how to think about this new relation between string theory and Young-Mills theory. So how does this new twist of string theory fits into the duality web? Because what's, for example, its connection to the ADS CFT, because we all know that there's an ADS 5 string theory dual to n equals to 4 Young-Mills. Now, let me just conclude by saying, so this was all for the tree level. At loop level, there are various problems with all these three different proposals, and I think Mark is now going to outline all the questions here.
Yeah. So the reason we decided to postpone questions until after my presentation is I'm going to be asking all of the questions. since I was specifically asked to try to be a little bit provocative, I created just a list of questions here. But since the last talk had such an excellent title, The Two Towers, I couldn't help but resist to add another title to my talk. Okay, so this is a conference on QCD and string theory. So let me start. I'm going to go a little bit out of order. So my first question is, should have done it practices. Can we make more use of more than just lines and planes? So what we've learned this morning is that there's some remarkable connection between geometric objects in twister space and gluon scattering amplitudes in QCD or supersymmetric Young-Mills theory. Who would have thought, right? But so far, for the most part, in fact, 99% of what you've heard in all of the three talks this morning only use the very simplest geometric structures in twister space, lines and planes. I would have said 100%, but Sri did have one transparency where he talked about higher degree curves a little bit. So some of my questions here I'm very optimistic on, and some I'm pessimistic on. This one I'm very optimistic on, because if you're impressed with the tremendous progress that's been made so far, and it certainly is impressive, I really feel that it's like, you know, we're only using so far a hammer and a chisel, and wait till we break out the heavy artillery, then things are really going to happen. But the point is that, I'd really like to see more use of higher degree curves in twister space, but especially higher genus structure. So if you're not mathematically inclined, I should warn you that whenever people talk about a line in twister space, what they really mean is a sphere. So it's something that's topologically a sphere. But of course, it would be nice to have some formulation of loop amplitudes that, for example, involved higher genus Riemann surfaces in twister space. That would be nice to see. So another thing that would be nice to see is whether there's some connection to integrability. Of course, this is a hot topic in n equals 4 Young-Mills theory these days. And since we're discovering some remarkable new and deep mathematical structure in the perturbative scattering amplitudes, maybe this remarkable structure translates over somehow into the studies of integrability. In fact, legend has it that Witten's original motivation for finding this is that he was trying to figure out how the infinite dimensional Yangian symmetry of n equals 4 Young-Mills theory acts on various correlation functions or something like that. Tsi mentioned a little bit where one might go in this direction by looking at the Dieglap equations. I have nothing more to say about that other than that it's certainly a very interesting direction that should be pursued. But a related question is whether we can go on off-shell. Because another feature of everything you heard about in all three talks this morning is that they related to on-shell scattering amplitudes in n equals 4 Young-Mills theory. And if you've spent your last 7 years hanging out with string theorists studying ADS-CFT, they turn up their nose and say, oh, what are you talking about? It's a conformal field theory. It doesn't make sense to calculate scattering amplitudes. Well, Tsvi already diffused that little bomb during his talk, so I won't go there. But certainly it is the case that from the string theory point of view, the observables that we're most interested in are the off-shell correlation functions, because they should encode in some subtle way they should holographically encode the quasi-local physics of the gravitational theory in the bulk. So this point I'm very pessimistic on at the moment, because the on-shell condition p squared equals zero is really just built in right at the foundation in this whole twister space construction. So it's not clear it's not clear whether there's any sense in which we can go off shell. I'm going to make one little caveat to this argument a little bit later, but certainly that's an interesting direction to go in. So this is perhaps the big question. Can we decouple the closed strings? Because all of the currently known formulations of twister string theory are polluted by closed strings. So that's a generic feature of open string theory, that whenever you have an open string theory, you inevitably have closed strings running in the loops. Unless you can find some decoupling limit, like, for example, ADS-CFT is an example of a decoupling limit where we manage to decouple the closed strings. Unfortunately, the problems with the closed strings are different depending on which formulation of twister string theory you're using, but let me stick to this topological B model. It doesn't really seem like there's any consistent way to decouple the closed strings. I don't think the case is completely closed, but it definitely looks problematic. So I'm going to start getting into really provocative, you know, if you thought these were provocative, well, you haven't seen anything yet. So then the next question is there a lesson here for string duality? So this problem about decoupling the closed strings is a little bit problematic, because we have this topological B model, which from all appearances seems to be perfectly well defined, and yet there's no consistent decoupling limit to get rid of the closed strings. On the other hand, we have N equals 4 Yang-Mills theory, and N equals 4 Yang-Mills theory seems to be perfectly happy. There's nothing in N equals 4 Yang-Mills theory that's shouting out, help, help, I really need to be coupled to conformal supergravity, otherwise I'm inconsistent. Let me propose something here which I call the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that what Witten has discovered is a remarkable mathematical structure in the classical Yang-Mills equations, and that these are what account for the fact that we can so efficiently compute tree-level amplitudes. Because if you'll notice, Zvi in his talk over and over again emphasized the fact that the only thing they were using in all of these loop calculations are the fact that you can feed tree amplitudes into loops using unitarity. So one possibility is that there's no direct application of any of this to loops, only an accidental application so far as the fact that you can feed in through the unitarity formula. Now, I'm actually pretty optimistic about this, because I think string theory is much smarter than I am, so I'm sure it can figure out a way. But at the moment, you know, that so... Oh, and I should also say, even if that worst-case scenario turns out to be true, that's already pretty darn good. So I think you'd be happy with that. But so the lesson here for string duality is, suppose we're forced to admit that the relation between the topological B model and N equals 4 Yang-Mills theory is only accidental, that, well, they have the same spectrum, they have the same symmetries, so they only accidentally agree at tree level. Well, then what other string dualities are only accidentally true? So then finally is the big question, which is, will Feynman rules still be taught in 20 years? Now, in the beginning of when people first studied quantum field theory, it was thought that they were defined by their Feynman rules. You know, back in the days when Julian Schwinger would calculate all Wick contractions by hand. So now, of course, we understand that quantum field theories are not organized by graphs, but by scales. We have the path integral, the Wilsonian revolution, and all that. But still, we carry all this 50-year-old baggage along with us, these Feynman diagrams. And just to hear the utter contempt that Zvi uses in describing the inefficiency of Feynman diagrams, you know, we may be on the beginning of a revolution where we realize that we can just throw away all that garbage and have a much better understanding of how to formulate perturbative quantum field theory. And I'd like to say, also in the connection to integrability, all this remarkable work that's been done at 2, 3, 4, 5 loops, those people don't calculate any, there have been, Beisert and Staudinger et al., all of their 3 and higher loop calculations don't involve a single Feynman diagram. And so the people who want to check their calculations work really, really, really hard, but they can do all of your calculations without a diagram. So that's a list of questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
I only have more questions.
Uh-huh. So my questions.
Yeah. To, So I'm actually very intrigued by your comment on using more than lines and planes. But the reason why we use lines and planes is because there's nice, simple differential equations.
Sure.
Do you have any idea about the better differential equations, you know, some set of differential equations that will teach you about the curves? You need some differential operator in order to attack it. Can you see anything on the horizon or any idea?
In some limited cases, one can do something along that lines, but along those lines, but there's no coherent picture that I know of. Like, for example, one might imagine a differential operator of order d, a dth order differential operator that should annihilate. But I don't think that's not really the way it works.
Well, before we realize that you can study these amplitudes with just lines and connected by propagators and so on, we actually, with Peter and Edward, we actually work out an operator that annihilates any amplitude that is localized on a twisted cubic.
Just so degree 3.
Yeah. Degree 3.
Can you write it down?
Well, maybe Peter can do it. I think.
Maybe just roughly. Roughly, just an outline.
Well, essentially, the point that Freddy is trying to make, and he hasn't made yet, is that all higher degree differential operators can be expressed in terms of collinear and coplanar operators. So in the end, things reduce in some sense to just lines and planes. And as far as this operator is concerned, it's written this way, it's a product of 4 coplanar operators minus a different product of 4 coplanar operators. And since we know that eventually the degree 3 amplitude is coplanar, or it has some properties like that, you can show without actually applying this operator that it annihilates the amplitude.
So in that case, it's an eighth order differential operator?
Yeah, we have a comment on the can we go off shell? So, well, we tried to go off shell with the massive Higgs, mm-hmm. because the scalar is a little easier because you don't need to have any external wave function for it. You don't have to talk about its different helicity structure since it's a scalar. But you can go off shell at least in the case of one scalar, and the twisted space interpretation probably would be an interpretation of the remaining massless degrees of freedom, and the massive degrees of freedom would not be interpreted in this way. There's another point is that if you're really interested, I mean, if we are interested in applying these methods to phenomenology, where there are there are massive particles, so all these heavy massive particles would decay, so you might want to. You might want to still construct a theory with only with external lines being massless, light meaning massless, and then the massive particles will be only on the internal lines. But internal lines are off shell already, mm-hmm. right? Because it's off shell propagate. So there shouldn't be many difficulties. Even though the details of it were not worked out yet, it should be possible to go off shell in the amplitude sense of way, not in the sense of Green's functions.
I mean, isn't can we go off shell the same as can we decouple the closed strings? I mean, if you can't decouple the gravitational sector, you can't go off shell.
Well, but
physical sense, and
yeah.
And also another question: isn't it clear from the more clear from the Berkowitz formulation that you can't decouple the closed strings because they appear sort of in the open string sector
sure.
already?
The Berkowitz formulation has a lot of extra junk also in addition to, yeah. But as far as going off shell, there are two senses of off shell. But what I meant was just going off shell in n equals 4 Yang Mills, and there you shouldn't. Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. Can I ask another related question? How important is it to have a topological string theory? So the topological string theory was supposed to be dual to an n equals 4 superconformal Young Mills. Now we see that the methods work at loop level in any supersymmetric theory which is not superconformal.
Mm-hmm.
But even though the loops are, you can say the loops are made of trees, but the loops are always made of trees. You just integrate around the loop.
So the advantage of the topological string is just that it doesn't have the infinite, all the infinite tower of massive string states are not there to begin with. But I really think that the way to go in this is sort of to follow your nose and work backwards. And that's also the way Witten did in his first paper. Look at this gauge theory structure and explore it more deeply and then try to guess back what kind of string theory it should be.
So since we see that the methods work, at least in n equals 1 super Young Mills at one loop level, which is not super conformal.
Absolutely.
Presumably the yet unknown string theory, which is dual to it, doesn't have to be topological. And then
absolutely,
you shouldn't have a great difficulty in decoupling gravitons from the gauge particles in the loops.
Well,
I have just a very simple-minded question for the experts. Concerning the MHV rules, say just for doing tree diagrams, am I correct in understanding that at the moment this is a conjecture that has not been demonstrated but works for diagrams with whatever up to 7 number of gluons? And if that's true, what are the prospects for actually deriving this?
Maybe I'll take the question. Actually, my friend David Kossauer has checked this to 15 points. I think it was, I can't remember, it was 5 or 4 negative felicities, but it's true. So it's not, there is no question this is correct. Okay, then, no, I'm getting to that.
Consistency checks are not derivations, so
but you see, that is correct. Consistency checks are not derivations, but getting correct answers are much more important. However, and these are correct answers, however, a proof will come in time. The reason why no proof has appeared is because at the moment, I think everyone agrees, there are much more important problems to work on. But a proof will come sooner or later. What you have to do is start with, one possibility is to start with David Kossauer's light cone recursion relations, because clearly light cone gauge is very close to this. However, it's not the same thing, and what you have to do is shake it and shake it until you've shaken it, you shook it into the right form. That's how you'd prove it.
But you should mention that the reason, I mean, you know it's right because of the multi-particle pool.
Yeah, there's other reasons, besides, in fact, when Freddie came to my office and he showed this to me, it took me 5 minutes to know it was correct. And the reason is because S matrix elements are very tightly constrained. They must have very particular factorization and collinear limits in multiparticle poles, and their expression manifestly has that property. Therefore, it's correct. So we knew it was correct immediately, and then it was just collecting a little more numerical evidence, and then we march.
May I ask you a little about Higgs? Because when you consider this massive Higgs, let's say that I am considering the masses limit of the Higgs. And should be kind of very simple check, because in the masses limit, you probably remember this low energy theorem, you can say that it is just, in this case, it would like derivative over coupling constant, right? Because it's just coefficient of g mu square. So, but your expression look like mh to the fourth.
We checked it. That's precisely what we did. It's in this paper. So we checked the massless Higgs limit.
Yeah.
And what we found is that these two towers and whatever collapse completely to the standard MHV rules in gauge theory. So you saw that the amplitudes, the phi MHV amplitudes, were the same as tree-level MHV amplitudes apart from momentum conservation. Now we set the Higgs momentum to zero, it becomes massless, and the rules collapse, and so everything is consistent.
But it was proportional to MH to the fourth power, so if you take...
So these amplitudes vanish. Whatever is proportional to MH to the fourth has to vanish. Uh-huh. Then there are some amplitudes which are not proportional to MH to the fourth, and they simplify. And so that was precisely checked. And the fact which you mentioned that the Higgs, when it's just a constant, it looks like a derivative with respect to coupling constant, that's what we used.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. Any other?
Okay.
I'd like to come to standard QCD. We know that there are all these factorization theorems. Can these techniques be used to somehow look at them in a new way? Factorization of soft and collinear.
The answer is actually yes. The old way of proving those theorems is through use of light cone gauge, but the kind of ideas with unitarity, I think that's it's a much cleaner way. We wrote this, unfortunately I shouldn't say simpler because it's a 100-page paper on how to use these unitarity rules. And, you know, related to it is using tree amplitudes to have the same simplicity of factorization that you find in light cone gauge. So I think there's a connection there. There's something that you can use as a different and cleaner way to look at things.
I mean, in light cone gauge, you have the instantaneous interaction as well as the propagating gluons. At what point do you see them? I mean, they should appear in T-channel exchanges.
In any kind of Feynman diagram calculation, you're full of gauge garbage, gauge artifact garbage. Yes, I realize that. But the point is that things, you know, if you can clean things up, make cancellations, appropriate cancellations to diagrams, then things are cleaner. And in this MHV approach, it's just not there because it's been cleaned up. You know, just a question, you know, Feynman diagrams inherently, each diagram is not gauge invariant. So any conclusion, whatever you might say about a particular diagram, you say, oh, look, you have to add this particular diagram with an instantaneous interaction. Those kinds of statements are gauge dependent and they're artifacts. If you're looking at gauge invariant objects, then you won't encounter these types of artifacts. Well, here it's there, and some, you know, it's been absorbed in. Yeah, it's not light cone gauge. It's something a little different, where things have been cleaned up. It's hidden in there. It's in there. It's just a question of any time you work with any gauge, whatever it may be, there will be gauge artifacts. And if you read too much into any given property of a Feynman diagram in a given gauge,
but they construct a loop from imaginary path in a sense.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't emerge in your
QCD problem. Excuse me?
You can't do this.
No, but that's a different issue. That has to do with continuing into D dimensions. It's related to trying to make things massive. Basically, the problem isn't, there is no problem with unitarity, any of these techniques, except when you start using helicity methods. So in D dimensions, you can do the loops, you just use on-shell gauge invariant objects, you can construct any of the loop amplitudes, and then these issues about cut constructibility, the fact that you lose certain pieces, that all only has to do with using helicity states. If you do not use helicity states, there is no problem. You can just calculate using the unitarity method.
Okay. I think that we probably have enough of three. Oh, one more? Okay.
Just to add to your provocative remark about what's wrong with n equals 4 Young-Mills. If you look at external anomalies of n equals 4 Young-Mills, it does have superconformal anomalies. So if you couple it to conformal supergravity, we do have anomaly.
Okay, yeah.
And that principle raises a question regarding any embedding into string theory, because if you remember the old dogma that any symmetry in string theory should be gauged, any global symmetry should be gauged. Now, in ADS 5S5, we talk about string theory, it does have global symmetry. In that particular embedding, it's really perturbative embedding where you have open strings coupled to closed strings. So here, that anomaly is canceled. So all I'm trying to say is that there is something wrong with n equals 4 Young-Mills in this context. Once you couple to closed strings.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that it's time to thank all the speakers and presenters of this morning.